The Journey to the West is more than just a beloved Chinese classic. It's a cultural phenomenon that has shaped Eastern storytelling for centuries. This epic tale of a Buddhist monk's pilgrimage, accompanied by supernatural companions, has been adapted countless times into films, TV shows, comics, and video games. Even the Matrix trilogy drew inspiration from its themes and characters. Originally published in the 16th century during the Ming Dynasty, this novel has been ranked among the four great classical novels of Chinese literature. Its enduring popularity stems from its perfect blend of adventure, humor, religious allegory, and profound wisdom. The book has influenced countless creators, from celebrated filmmaker Zhang Yimou to the late martial arts icon Bruce Lee, who once remarked that the Monkey King embodied the perfect balance of discipline and rebellion that informed his own philosophy. On the majestic Flower Fruit Mountain stands an immortal stone, perfectly aligned with celestial measurements, that has absorbed the essences of heaven and earth for countless eons. One day, this stone miraculously gives birth to a stone egg that transforms into a monkey whose eyes shoot golden beams reaching the palace of the Pole Star, attracting even the Jade Emperor's attention. This extraordinary creature joins other animals on the mountain, where he becomes their king through his courage and intelligence. Seeking immortality, the Monkey King journeys to find a teacher and eventually discovers the patriarch Sabodi dwelling in the cave of Slanting Moon and Three Stars. Impressed by the monkey's determination, Sabodi bestows upon him the surname Sun and the religious name Wukong, Wake to the Void. Under the patriarch's guidance, Wukong quickly masters the art of the earthly multitude with 72 transformations and the cloud somersault technique that carries him 108,000 miles in a single leap. After 20 years of study, Wukong returns to Flower Fruit Mountain to discover his monkey subjects terrorized by a monster. In a display of his newfound powers, he defeats the monstrous King of Havoc and frees his kidnapped followers. This victory establishes his reputation as a formidable warrior and protector. Not content with merely ruling his mountain, Wukong trains his subjects in military exercises and acquires weapons from the royal armory of Olai country through cunning and magical prowess. Still dissatisfied with his heavy scimitar, Wukong visits the Dragon King of the Eastern Ocean and demands a divine weapon. After rejecting several offerings as too light, he receives a magical iron rod, the very measure used by the Great Yu to fix the depths of rivers during the Great Flood. This extraordinary weapon weighs 13,500 pounds and can change size according to Wukong's wishes. With his new weapon and martial attire from the Four Dragon Kings, Wukong returns triumphantly to Flower Fruit Mountain, where he demonstrates his powers by growing to 10,000 feet tall with a head like Mount Tai, making even demon kings tremble in fear. In a pivotal moment that foreshadows his rebellious nature, Wukong breaks into the underworld and erases all monkey names from the Register of Death, declaring, "That ends the account. Now I'm truly not your subject." This act of defiance against cosmic order marks the beginning of Wukong's journey from mere immortal to the infamous great sage equal to heaven. When complaints about Wukong's disruptive behavior reach the Jade Emperor, the celestial ruler decides to bring the troublesome monkey under control by offering him an official position in heaven. Upon arriving at the magnificent South Heaven Gate with its green glazed tiles, jade battlements, and golden armored sentinels, Wukong marvels at heaven's splendor, the halls with dragon-circled pillars, phoenixes soaring over bridges, 33 heavenly mansions, and 72 treasure halls. However, the Jade Emperor's strategy backfires when Wukong discovers he's been assigned the lowly position of ban horse plague at the Imperial Stables. Insulted by this menial role, Wukong abandons his post and returns to Flower Fruit Mountain, where he proclaims himself the Great Sage, equal to heaven, and threatens to storm the treasure hall of Divine Mists unless granted this title. Rather than risk open conflict, the Jade Emperor grants Wukong his desired title, an empty honor with no official duties or salary. Temporarily pacified, Wukong accepts the invitation and settles into heavenly life, with a residence near the Garden of Immortal Peaches and two departments, Peace and Quiet and Serene Spirit, established for him with attending officials. But the Monkey King, being a wild spirit at heart, cares nothing for titles or bureaucratic responsibilities. He simply places his name on the register and spends his days eating, sleeping, and socializing freely throughout heaven, treating all immortals as equals regardless of rank. When assigned to manage the Garden of Immortal Peaches, Wukong discovers the preparations for the Grand Festival of Immortal Peaches to which he hasn't been invited. Offended by this exclusion, Wukong immobilizes the seven immortal maidens with a spell and investigates the Jasper Pool himself. There, he feasts on the exquisite delicacies and wines prepared for the celebration, getting thoroughly drunk. In his inebriated wandering, he stumbles into Laozi's Tushita Palace and consumes 5 gourds of golden elixir before fleeing back to Flowerfruit Mountain. When Heaven discovers these transgressions, the Jade Emperor commands an army of deities to capture the rebellious monkey, setting up 18 cosmic nets to trap him. Despite facing the combined might of the 4 great Devarajas, the 28 constellations, and 100,000 celestial soldiers, Wukong fights valiantly, using his hair magic to create thousands of duplicates of himself to drive back the heavenly forces. After numerous failed attempts to subdue the great sage, including sending celestial armies and deploying powerful deities, the increasingly desperate Jade Emperor realizes that conventional methods cannot contain Sun Wukong's chaos. As a last resort, he sends his most trusted emissaries to the Western region to seek help from the Buddha himself, the supreme embodiment of enlightenment and wisdom. When Buddha arrives at the Celestial Palace, he finds a scene of unprecedented disorder. Wukong, drunk on his own power and immortality, stands amid the wreckage of Heaven's armies. The Monkey King boasts extravagantly of his abilities. His mastery of 72 transformations, his cloud somersault technique, his indescribable body, and his defeat of Heaven's mightiest warriors. With characteristic arrogance, he challenges the Enlightened One to a wager. If Wukong can leap out of Buddha's palm, Buddha must cede control of heaven to him. Supremely confident in his cloud somersault technique that can carry him 108,000 miles in a single bound, Wukong accepts Buddha's seemingly simple challenge. He jumps onto the Buddha's vast palm, which appears to him as stable as a continent. Using his most powerful leap, Wukong soars through the cosmos, leaving trails of clouds in his wake. He travels until he reaches what appears to be the edge of existence, 5 massive pillars stretching into the infinite void. To mark his triumph, he does what any self-respecting trickster would do, urinates at the base of one pillar, and carves, "The great sage equal to heaven was here," on another, leaving his signature as proof of his incredible journey. Upon returning to claim his victory, Wukong faces a shocking revelation. Buddha calmly explains that the Monkey King never actually left his palm. The entire journey occurred within the confines of his hand. The 5 mighty pillars were merely Buddha's 5 fingers, and Wukong's boastful markings rest on Buddha's thumb. With a simple turn of his hand, Buddha transforms his fingers into the 5 phases mountain, imprisoning the stunned and humbled monkey beneath its massive weight. To ensure the imprisonment's effectiveness, Buddha places a powerful Sanskrit mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, on a golden seal, affixing it to the mountain. He then instructs local earth spirits to sustain the prisoner with a diet of iron pellets and molten copper until the day of his eventual redemption. For 5 centuries, Sun Wukong remains trapped beneath the mountain, a period that serves as both punishment and profound spiritual transformation. This forced stillness becomes a crucible for change, tempering his chaotic nature and preparing him for a greater purpose. The once proud monkey who declared himself equal to heaven learns the virtues of patience, humility, and the limits of individual power. The once imprisonment marks not just the end of his rebellion against heaven, but the beginning of his metamorphosis from an unbridled force of chaos into a disciplined protector of the Dharma. Meanwhile, in the mortal realm, a parallel story unfolds that will eventually intersect with Wukong's fate. In Chang'an, the ancient capital of the Tang Dynasty, Chen Guangrui becomes Zhuangyan, top imperial scholar, and marries Yin Wenzhao, daughter of Chief Minister Yin. While traveling to his post as governor of Zhangzhou, they leave his ailing mother at an inn, and at the Hong River crossing, boatmen Liu Hong and Li Bio murder Guangrui and force Lady Yin to become Lu's wife. The pregnant Lady Yin gives birth to a son whom she places on a plank in the river with a letter explaining his origins and a missing toe as identification. Abbot Faming of Gold Mountain Temple rescues the infant, naming him River Float, and later Xuanzang when he becomes a monk at 18. Upon learning his origins, Xuanzang reunites with his mother and grandmother, miraculously restoring the latter's sight by licking her eyes. With the help of Chief Minister Yin and the Tang Emperor's soldiers, they capture Liu Hong and Li Bio. After their confession, Li Bio is executed in the marketplace, while Liu Hong has his heart and liver cut out alive at the Hong River as sacrifice to Chen Guangrui's spirit. The sacrifice summons supernatural forces that restore Guangrui's soul to his body, allowing him to reunite with his family. The Tang Emperor promotes Guangrui to sub-chancellor of the Grand Secretariat, and Xuanzang returns to Gold Mountain Temple to continue his monastic life. Years later, Emperor Tang Taizong has a supernatural encounter with the underworld after failing to save a Dragon King from execution. During his journey through hell, Taizong witnesses various torments in the 18-fold hell, each punishment matching specific earthly sins like fraud, violence, and murder. Upon his return to life, he convenes a grand mass for the souls of the dead. During this ceremony, a slip of paper floats down containing a verse that urges the Tang Emperor to seek the sublime scriptures of the West, promising these Mahayana texts can redeem damned spirits from hell. When the Emperor asks who will undertake this dangerous journey, Xuanzang steps forward, vowing that if he fails to obtain the true scriptures, he will never return to China, even if it means eternal damnation. Setting out from Chang'an with the Emperor's blessing, Xuanzang, now given the title Tripitaka, begins his westward journey. After several days of travel, he becomes lost in a mountain range and falls into a deep pit where he's captured by fierce ogres. The planet Venus, Gold Star, appears in disguise to rescue him, revealing in a verse that divine help awaits Tripitaka on his journey ahead. At the Mountain of Two Frontiers, Tripitaka hears a voice crying, "My master has come!" Investigating, he discovers Sun Wukong trapped beneath the Five Phases Mountain. The monkey explains that Bodhisattva Guanyin had instructed him to protect the scripture pilgrim on his journey west. After confirming Wukong's sincerity through prayer, Tripitaka removes Buddha's seal, freeing the monkey after 500 years of imprisonment. Wukong immediately kneels before Tripitaka, calling him master and demonstrating his extraordinary abilities, transforming his iron rod from needle size to weapon, slaying a tiger with one blow, and fashioning clothes from the tiger's skin. He reveals his powers to subdue dragons and tame tigers, and his countless transformations, becoming Tripitaka's first disciple. Their journey continues until they reach Mr. Gao Village, where they encounter a monster who has forcibly married a young woman named Green Orchid. Through clever deception, Wukong confronts this creature, revealed to be Zhu Gongli, Stiff Bristles, formerly the Marshal of Heavenly Reeds, who was banished from heaven for drunken dalliance with the moon goddess and reborn through a sow's womb. After a fierce battle, Zhu surrenders upon learning that Wukong serves Tripitaka on the scripture-seeking mission. Having been instructed by Bodhisattva Guanyin to await the scripture pilgrim, he joins their party as the second disciple, nicknamed Eight Rules, Baji. At the treacherous flowing sand river, they encounter another fearsome monster, a sand demon who devours travelers. After fierce combat, where Eight Rules fights valiantly but cannot overcome the creature, Pilgrim seeks help from Bodhisattva Guanyin. She reveals that this river monster is actually the incarnate curtain-raising captain, whom she had already converted to help the scripture pilgrims. When called by his religious name, Wu Jing, the creature immediately recognizes his divine appointment and willingly becomes Tripitaka's third disciple, nicknamed Sha Monk. With his three powerful disciples, Wukong, Monkey, leading the way, Eight Rules, Pig, and Sha Monk, Sand, flanking him on either side, and a white horse that is actually a transformed dragon, Tripitaka continues his westward journey toward Buddha's sacred mountain. The pilgrims face numerous trials designed to test their resolve and worthiness. At Pagoda Mountain, they encounter the Crow's Nest Chan Master, who offers Tripitaka the Heart Sutra as protection against demonic hindrances. This 54-sentence text explains emptiness, non-duality, and the path to enlightenment, concluding with the mantra, Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasamgate, Bodhisvaha. The journey becomes increasingly perilous as they reach Yellow Wind Ridge, a mountain spanning 800 miles and infested with monsters. There, a fierce yellow wind monster captures Tripitaka using deceptive magic. When Wukong attempts to rescue his master, he discovers the monster's devastating wind is so powerful it scatters the cosmos, forcing even dragon kings and thunder gods to flee. Only with divine assistance from the Bodhisattva Lingji can they overcome this supernatural obstacle. Beyond physical dangers, the pilgrims face moral temptations that test their spiritual commitment. When offered wealth and beautiful women by a widow, they respond differently according to their natures. Tripitaka maintains his monastic virtue, countering worldly temptations with a poem. The will to leave home is no common thing. It beats the life of lust for household meat. You rot with age, one stinking bag of flesh. Meanwhile, Eight Rules succumbs to lust, agreeing to marry one of the widow's daughters, only to discover the entire encounter was an illusion created by bodhisattvas to teach them a lesson about attachment. At Five Villages Abbey, the disciples' greed is tested when they discover extraordinary ginseng fruits that grant longevity, blooming only once in 3,000 years, bearing fruit after another 3,000, and ripening after yet another 3,000. Despite knowing these are someone else's treasures, Eight Rules convinces Wukong to help him steal some from the garden. This theft leads to their capture by the Great Immortal, who threatens to fry them in oil as punishment for destroying his precious tree. Through each trial, the pilgrims gradually learn to overcome their individual flaws. Wukong's pride and impulsiveness, Eight Rules' gluttony and lust, Sha Monk's violent tendencies, and Tripitaka's naivety and fear. These lessons transform them from a disparate group of former sinners into a unified team capable of facing the challenges that lie ahead on their sacred mission. Beyond its adventure narrative, the journey to the West reveals itself as a profound spiritual allegory. This dimension becomes explicit when Tripitaka, after hearing Wukong's quatrain about spirit mountain dwelling in the mind, acknowledges, according to these four lines, the lesson of all scriptures concerns only the cultivation of the mind. Wukong affirms this interpretation, adding, when the mind is pure, it shines forth as a solitary lamp, and when the mind is secure, the entire phenomenal world becomes clarified. The novel's allegorical framework draws heavily from Chan Buddhism's emphasis on immediate enlightenment rather than gradual cultivation. When Sha Monk asks about the distance to Thunderclap Temple, Wukong's response, 108,000 miles, carries profound symbolic meaning, as this is precisely the distance covered by one of his cloud somersaults. This paradox of vast distance yet immediate traversal perfectly embodies Chan's teaching that enlightenment occurs in an instant when the mind is properly cultivated. Each character represents aspects of human consciousness that must be harmonized for spiritual advancement. Tripitaka symbolizes the aspiring but vulnerable human spirit. Wukong represents the clever but unruly mind that must be disciplined. Eight Rules embodies bodily desires that must be controlled, and Sha Monk represents the steadfast will needed for spiritual practice. The journey itself metaphorically depicts the path to enlightenment, filled with obstacles that represent internal struggles rather than external threats. Mountains symbolize the difficulties of spiritual practice. Rivers represent the flow of desires that must be crossed. Demons personify negative emotions and attachments that hinder progress. This allegorical reading explains why readers from Ming times to contemporary scholars have recognized that one principal subject of the novel focuses on the cultivation of heart and mind, a theme central to Neo-Confucian discourse and popular morality. The external journey to India for scriptures parallels the internal journey toward self-understanding and spiritual awakening, a universal quest that transcends cultural and temporal boundaries. A central irony in the novel emerges in the relationship between Tripitaka and Wukong. While the fictional Tripitaka is introduced as a monk who had no love for glory or wealth, being dedicated wholly to the pursuit of nirvana, with not one of the thousands of classics and sutras he had failed to master, this erudition ironically contradicts Chan ideals, which do not value mastery of 1,000 classics and 10,000 canons. Throughout the journey, Tripitaka remains dull of mind and impoverished in perception, unable to learn from his experiences despite the many lessons providentially sent his way. Meanwhile, Sun Wukong emerges as the true Chan adept, repeatedly teaching his master the meaning of the Heart Sutra that Tripitaka mechanically recites without understanding. When Tripitaka complains about sensory disturbances, Monkey reminds him, "You have forgotten the sentence about no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, or mind. This is called the extermination of the six robbers." In another instance, when Tripitaka questions if Monkey knows the sutra's interpretation, Wukong responds with silence, a perfect Chan demonstration that Tripitaka surprisingly recognizes as interpretation in a speechless language. That's true interpretation. This inversion of the traditional master-disciple relationship reveals the novel's profound insight. True wisdom comes not from external sources or rote learning, but from direct experience and intuitive understanding. The pilgrim's quest for physical scriptures in the West ironically underscores that the ultimate teaching cannot be found in texts, but must be realized within one's own mind, a paradoxical truth that becomes clear only through the journey itself. The Journey to the West stands as one of world literature's most enduring masterpieces, operating simultaneously on multiple levels, as thrilling adventure narrative, profound religious instruction, biting social satire, and deep philosophical exploration. Its characters undergo transformative journeys that mirror the spiritual quest every individual faces when seeking meaning, purpose, and enlightenment in their lives. Sun Wukong's evolution forms the story's emotional core, transforming from a chaos-sowing rebel to a disciplined spiritual warrior. His journey from the prideful monkey king who stormed heaven to a devoted guardian of truth demonstrates how even the most powerful talents must be tempered by wisdom and compassion. The golden headband that controls his destructive impulses symbolizes the necessary restraint that all must learn to achieve true mastery of themselves. Eight Rules, Zhu Baji, presents a deeply human struggle with base desires, particularly his legendary appetites for food and carnal pleasures. His gradual transformation from a hedonistic immortal to a reliable, if still occasionally backsliding, illustrates how one can maintain humor and earthly enjoyment while pursuing higher purposes. His role as the group's beast of burden teaches the dignity found in humble service. Sha Monk's journey from river monster to steadfast disciple exemplifies the possibility of complete redemption. His unwavering loyalty and quiet strength provide a counterpoint to his more colorful companions, demonstrating how past violence can be transformed into protective power. His presence reminds us that spiritual growth often requires still waters running deep. Tripitaka, despite being the group's nominal leader, embodies admirable humility and perseverance rather than dramatic power. His human frailties and fears make him relatable, while his unwavering commitment to his sacred mission, despite countless hardships and setbacks, showcases the power of devoted faith. His leadership style demonstrates how true authority comes not from force, but from moral conviction. Through their collective pilgrimage, these unlikely companions illustrate how different aspects of human nature, intellectual brilliance, physical desire, willpower, and spiritual aspiration, can be harmonized through shared purpose and mutual support. Their interactions reveal that the path to enlightenment requires both individual effort and community support, with each member's strengths compensating for others' weaknesses. The novel's genius lies in its seamless integration of profound spiritual teachings with vibrant storytelling. Comic episodes sit comfortably alongside deep philosophical insights, while fantastic battles carry moral lessons about the nature of reality and illusion. This masterful balance of entertainment and enlightenment has allowed the work to transcend its cultural origins, speaking to readers across centuries and continents about universal human experiences and aspirations. In its totality, The Journey to the West offers not just entertainment, but transformation, inviting readers to embark on their own pilgrimage of self-discovery. Like all true spiritual quests, the journey leads simultaneously outward toward new horizons of understanding and inward toward profound self-knowledge, making it eternally relevant to each new generation of seekers.